Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Slightly favours the right footer here, but Griffiths, having got the goal, goes again.
Quick five and tries it, don't know. Long we over. Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
McCullough saved it in. Barry Ferguson.
Dalglish again. And it's there.
And here comes up chance.
A good start to the Nations League for Scotland. A comfortable and comprehensive victory over Armenia at hand, and it was a game that posed the threat of a banana skin, but Scotland showed no signs of slipping up. A 2-0 victory, Ralston with his first goal for Scotland on his first start, and Scott McKenna off the mark as well, which was great to see, and to play at left centre-back. So we're joined by John Bleasdale, a newly published author, the big man sitting there with a big broad grin on his face on the Zoom call. And then Barry Anderson from The Scotsman as well, joining us for a second call-up. Guys, it's going to be a good conversation today, not like the Ukraine one we had last week. Scotland were impressive and maybe showed more of what we expected in terms of intensity and energy and desire against Armenia than was shown against Ukraine. Barry, I think everyone was pretty happy with how that game played out on Wednesday.
Yeah, I would think so. I think a lot of the difference centred around the way they kept the ball and the way they moved the ball and sort of tight spaces around midfield and got into pockets in behind the front and managed to open up the Armenians a fair bit, which was very different, as we know, from the Ukraine game. It was quite a different approach, quite a kind of stark contrast between the two. And I've always felt this Scotland team, particularly with the midfield that we've got, is better suited to, you know, the short, sharp passing game. I'm not suggesting it's Barcelona here, but, you know, that's the... I think if we focus more on that, then we look a better side. I'm not, you know, of course, there's times when you need to go longer up to a Lyndon Dykes and get a flick on or hope he can chest it down and hold it in. But I think without Dykes on Wednesday night there, it just gave a little bit more opportunity for guys like Ryan Christie to get on the ball. Again, McGregor, obviously, as we saw. And we looked more of a threat. That's obviously down to, as well, to the difference between Armenia and Ukraine. Armenia were quite happy to string five men across the back, whereas Ukraine were pressing us quite aggressively and they were closing space pretty well. So, but overall, I mean, I'd like to take a few more of the chances. I think that's probably the only complaint I would have. We created so much until we get two. You know, I think we should have probably taken five or six in total. But you know, we've all been here before. A Scotland win. You need to take them when they come.
Yeah, I mean, this was no meaningless friendly where performance was more important than result, really. Performance was encouraged and given, but 3 points was what was needed, John, to get this Nations League off and running and respond from the disappointment against Ukraine.
Well, that's it. You know, I think we all went up to Hampden, you know, expecting a lot better. First of all, we knew we needed to win. And I think I was watching the John McGinn interview with Lewis Irons in the Scottish FA channel, and you could tell that they were hurting. You know, they knew they didn't turn up. They knew they let themselves down and they let the fans down and they owed a performance. And they went on that pitch with a sense of purpose. You could tell in the first 10 minutes that this was going to be a comfortable night because Armenia really did not look up to much and that progressed throughout the game. Craig Gordon made a couple of routine saves in the second half and that was about it. But Scotland were in full control from minute one. They passed the ball well, as Barry was saying. Only disappointment is we didn't score more, but it's always the same. When you win 2-0, you're hoping it's 3. When you win 3, you're hoping it was really 4, but that's just the nature of the beast. But no, I thought it was a comfortable night and a good start, encouraging start.
Barry mentions that the passing was crisper. There was a bit more intuition really throughout the team. I think probably because Dykes wasn't on the park, it eliminates that temptation just to take the easy option to go long, really, and give him the hard work to do. But is that caveated, as Barry says, by the fact that maybe Ukraine's press against us didn't allow us the opportunity to pass it through as much, and therefore we had to go along to Dykes? Or do you think that that is just simply a route that Scotland decided to go down, whether it was Clark or the players, because Dykes was there, and you know what, it's easier to do that than try and pass through a tricky opposition?
I mean, there could have been, there's fair comment on both of that, to be perfectly honest. I can see why he started Dykes. I personally wouldn't have made that decision. I thought Christie would have started the game. I was surprised that Dykes started, and, you know, when it came to the second half, when we were 2-0 down, that's when you bring someone like Dykes on, in my opinion. Of course, he'd left the pitch, but I don't want to dwell too much in the Ukraine game. That's gone. No, World Cup 2022 is gone. It's about focusing on the Euros. You know, we've still got a good opportunity, and we've got a good opportunity in this group if we play it right. We're up against, you know, as I say, I looked at Armenia's form in the Nations League because I wanted to see how on earth they get into the B, the Section B, and they did not look like a B League side when they played us the other night. No, of course, no. I know they beat Ireland at the weekend, but Ireland's in no great shapes. And I know they finished ahead of North Macedonia and Georgia, who improved, so they must have done something right. But no, it was just about a lot of the players had a point to prove, and for one or two coming into the team, you know, it was about them integrating themselves into the team. I mean, Scott McKenna possibly should have played against Ukraine. That was what I personally thought. But as we say, we can't dwell too much in Ukraine. It's about focusing on when Ukraine come to Hamden in September and when we go out there, because to me, that's the two crucial games to us to sign first place.
Let's talk about the man of the match, Barry. It was Anthony Ralston. There have been calls from the eastern end of Glasgow and those filtered throughout Scotland with a green and white persuasion to start him. And he was given his opportunity, I think, which, given Clark had said Patterson was fit, I think probably came as maybe a bit of a shock to most people that Ralston was given the nod from the start. But he seized it, and we're suddenly looking quite rosy at right back or right wing back.
Yeah, definitely. I think previously, I don't think too many people could have complained that Nathan Patterson was playing in the right wing-back role from the start, because he'd done so well there. You know, he'd got himself on the score sheet, and just his attacking instincts were such a part of the way Scotland were attacking and going forward. Defensively, he was getting better as well. So, firstly, I would have said, you know, I would have totally agreed with Steve Clark going along with those decisions and keeping Patterson in the team. Having said that, Ralston's come in now and really staked a claim. You can't imagine him being dropped for the Ireland game on Saturday. It makes no sense to drop him. So, yeah, as you say, great to be in that situation and have those options. You have to wonder what Stephen O'Donnell's thinking a little bit, because he's just been very reliable for Scotland in that position and always turns up. He's, you know, called up to the squad. He's always there. But I don't think, you know, that if you watch the games, and certainly Ralston's performance the other night, along with Patterson's in previous games, you'd have to say those two are ahead of him now, and probably battling it out for the right wing back slot between the two of them from here on.
John, were you pleasantly surprised by Ralston's overall performance, or did you expect him to come in and play in that way?
Yeah, I thought we would get a performance out of him. I didn't expect him to play as well as he did and be a man of match type of performance. But yeah, he's had a terrific season with Celtic. I mean, you think about a year ago since Ange Postecoglou came in Celtic, and he was the only recognised right back on the books, and he hadn't had particularly successful loan spells. So, you know, he was also told, right, we don't have anyone else, go grab your chance, and he's done that at Celtic.
Just to jump in on that point, John, it's kind of similar to the way that O'Donnell got his chance with Scotland. There weren't really many right backs going, and it was, right, well, this is your opportunity, go and make it your own.
Yeah, and he's absolutely seized it. He seized that opportunity. He's had a terrific season with Celtic. Even when they brought in the likes of Juranovic, he was still more or less in the team. And he said a terrific season. Then the other night, you know, the way he was attacking and getting himself into the back post, you know, whenever Robertson was playing across towards the back post, or Armstrong in the case of his goal, he looked threatening. And now, all of a sudden, as you say, we've got a problem for a nice problem for Saturday, because Nathan Patterson doesn't walk back in the team. And Nathan Patterson has only had, what, those 15 minutes that he got last Wednesday since March. And even before that, he only had a first half for Everton since he's went there. So It's a nice problem to have. I wonder about if this is sadly the beginning and the end for O'Donnell. You know, he's been in and out of Motherwell team that's not been doing particularly well. And now you've got the regular right back at Celtic and a guy, Nathan Patterson, who you'd like to think will kick on in the Everton team next season once he fully recovers from his injury. And you've got Calvin Ramsey likely going to be signing for Liverpool shortly. So there's automatically three guys who are playing at a high level that higher level than O'Donnell's going to be. But O'Donnell's been a great servant, and if he's still called up, he's still going to be reliable. But it is between Ralston and Patterson right now.
One step further back from Ralston, Barry, do we need to have a serious chat? Well, we're hardly the decision makers, but as stakeholders, do we need to have a serious chat about who we prefer out of McTominay and Suter?
I don't think there's a chat to be had, personally. I think we've seen Suter in a Scotland shirt before. He's not got as many caps as McTominay, but he looks like a centre-back, plays like a centre-back, thinks like a centre-back, positions himself like a centre-back. And McTominay doesn't, and that's not a criticism of McTominay because he's not a centre-back, he's a midfield player. Having said that, you would probably have to say that McTominay's best Scotland performances have been at centre-back so far in his Scotland career. For me, anyway, I think he's played better in defence than he has further forward. But we sort of recovered from his injury now, and you know, he had a good game the other night. I think Suter is the man for the right side of the centre-back role. You'd expect Grant Hanley to be in the middle of those three. McKean Tierney on the left when fit. Scott McKenna was terrific in that role the other night as well. And clearly, a really improved player from the player that we saw at Aberdeen and the player that we've seen in a Scotland shirt previously. And I think particularly with his distribution from the back, he was excellent the way he controlled the ball and just looked for the simple pass into midfield. And if it wasn't on, he would play probably a slightly more adventurous ball, but nonetheless still an accurate ball forward. He very rarely gave the ball away the other night, which is good to see from a Scottish point of view.
Yeah, they were fairly untested. I mean, Armenia had a couple of 40 forwards. I think was it Suter that made that really good last-ditch tackle when it looked like the striker was ending up one-on-one? I think Hendry or McTominay or somebody stumbled or slipped anyway and the striker was through, and I think Suter swept up really well. Jack Hendry came in to the middle and McKenna at the left. I was vocal in the build-up to this game that if Tierney's not fit, we should be playing a four. Didn't expect it to happen. Transpired exactly that way. But as McKenna the next best thing at left centre-half in the squad already, Barry? I know you're an advocate, as am I, of Stephen Kingsley, but McKenna certainly didn't do himself any harm, John.
Absolutely. Well, McKenna's been playing there all season for Nottingham Forest in that left centre-back position. He might not be able to bring out the ball as well as like a Tierney or a Kingsley and offer the same support to Robertson, but he's the most able in that squad, and that's why I was surprised he wasn't starting against Ukraine. Maybe they thought the hangover playing that playoff final got to him, but he was man of the match in that playoff final. He was in a high, and he's just continued that form, and he looks a completely different player from the one that went to Euros last year, because he was probably the one that was, there was a bit of debate, did he deserve his place, because he didn't have a great first season at Nottingham Forest, and Cooper's come in and really transformed him. And I thought, yeah, he was excellent. It was Hendry that made the kind of slip that led to the half chance that Suter defended very well. He shows the player on the outside and then makes his move, which makes me uncomfortable with Jack Hendry in the middle for the weekend. But none of the defence overall, for what they had to deal with, largely, they dealt with it very well. And you can't complain, they got a clean sheet.
Let's talk about the other end of the park then for a few minutes. You both said that the main disappointing thing about the game, and it's a very Scottish thing to do to focus on that after a comfortable win, was that we didn't score more goals or add a third earlier on in the game. McGinn came close to doing so. I actually thought it was a save. I was at the opposite end of the park in the north stand. Did the keeper get a touch on that? I've not seen the highlights back, the one where McGinn hit the bar.
Yeah, I think he did get a touch on it. Yeah. I haven't seen a replay, but I looked at the time like it just spun up off his fingertip.
Yeah. Well, Shea Adams, I've seen a narrative starting to build that Shea Adams needs a goal, which I accept and understand, but it's quite a weird one because he scored two really important goals only at the tail end of last year. So it's not like he's on an 8, 9, 10 game drought here. He sealed the games for us against Moldova and Denmark. But some people suggesting, Barry, that he might have looked a bit low in confidence, a bit tired against Armenia the other night. Do you expect him to continue up front against Ireland? And is there any need for a change? Do you trust him to get back in the goal trail?
Yeah, probably my question would be, if you're leaving him out, who's the replacement? You know, is Jacob Brown going to play up there as a centre-forward supported by two sort of deep-lying number 10s? No, I don't think so. Ross Stewart, I'll actually like Ross Stewart. I think he's got a right instinct about him as a centre-forward. And probably if he'd been on the pitch longer on Wednesday night, he would have gobbled up some of those chances, at least one or two of them. But lack of international experience, are you going to throw him in away in Dublin against a physical Irish defence? Probably not. He's just been playing in League One, you know, third tier English football. So I think Adams at the moment, he does look a little bit tired, Andy. I do agree with you there. And I can't dispute what other people have said on that. He does look a little bit fatigued. But if Dykes is injured, I think Adams is your best option. He's got the quality. We know he's got good touches. We know he'll bring other people into play. He can score a goal. So overall, I would still think, I don't think there's a need for a change, to answer your question. I think you need to give Adams the chance. And if it's not working after an hour or so, then you look at your Ross Stewarts or potentially somebody else.
That was the only thing that disappointed me about Wednesday was the substitutions and how late they were. I was expecting a couple of changes to be made like on the 60, 62 minute mark, and then maybe another couple on 75. To wait to 75 minutes when players have come off a long season, we've got another two games in the back of this, and the game is pretty much done. I know it takes one goal for Armenia and things could change, but we were in complete control. We could have made a couple of changes earlier, and there was just no point in putting Ross Stewart and Jacob Brown on the 5 minutes to go. Put them on in 75 minutes, give them 15 to see what they can do. Not five when the players are edging towards, you know, just getting to full time and, you know, getting ready for going to Ireland.
Yeah, look at the two goal records they have last season. I know Barry are saying Ross Stewart scored in League One, but 25 shows that he's coming into this camp with confidence, scored two really important goals for Sunderland in the playoffs. Jacob Brown scored 14 or 15 for Stoke at a good level. So these guys aren't going to come on and flounder against Armenia in a game that is in the palm of Scotland's hand, really. And I think we need to be careful a bit with Jacob Brown, because if Clark doesn't afford them opportunities, what's going to happen is he'll end up with 7 or 8 caps amounting to a total of about 84 minutes. And people will just see the numbers, 7 caps, no goals, and a narrative will develop that he's shite and that he's not worth calling up because he doesn't contribute anything. You know, not everyone sees the context of the bigger picture. And that, what's that, maybe his 4th cap now, Jacob Brown, something like that, 3rd, 4th, don't think it's his 5th. And I don't think he's played more than 5 minutes each time. I think that he deserves the opportunity, given his exploits for Stoke last season, to go and show what he can do in a Scotland shirt. I would expect it to be, as you say, Barry, behind Shea Adams, next to Christie, or next to McGinn, or next to Armstrong, rather than a centre-forward. I think that's mainly where he played for Stoke, supporting Stephen Fletcher, of all people, I believe.
Yeah. I think he is more of a second striker, if you want to call it that, than a number 9. And I agree, he needs... It's a difficult one because you need experience for these international games, particularly the ones away from home. But the only way you get that is by being on the pitch. And I do agree. I think Steve Clark... I think the difference on Wednesday night would probably have been if the third goal had gone in, and then he would probably have been quite eager to make the changes sooner. But at 2-0, he's probably thinking, as John said a minute ago, that the 2-0 is so easy just to get pegged back and there's only one goal in it, and then it, you know, panic stations a little bit. So he's probably wary of that. But we do have decent options up there, and we need to make the most of them and utilise them. So I think I would expect Adams to start in Dublin. If it's not working, I think when you get to the hour mark and if it's clearly not working, I think then you do need to make the changes quicker, because there's no way that this Scotland team should be going to Ireland and coming away with anything apart from a point, a minimum a point. I think you have to be going there looking to win, and I certainly think they're capable of going there and winning. And even if you do come away with a draw, I think you'd be disappointed with that, given the form that Ireland are in. So we have to be on the front foot and taking the game to them, and with plenty of attack and movement, creativity, and a bit of aggression in the final third to actually take the game to them and try and get ourselves a goal or two in front. We're absolutely capable of that. If you compare the squads, compare this Ireland squad to the current Scotland squad, man for man, Scotland squad better in my opinion. So I really hope that we have that forward-thinking approach in Dublin, and it's not a case of let's sit tight and hold on and see how the game develops.
I think that here's a bit of context about Ireland then, for anyone listening that isn't up to speed on how they've been doing recently. So I saw you reply to the tweet earlier, John, I think it was you, saying that we can't go to Dublin with a draw will do attitude, just kind of echoing your thoughts there, Barry, that we need to go and try and get a win, because Ireland are particularly OEB. Okay, we're not at our highest that we were approaching last summer, but I agree, we are a better team, and if we click, we should beat them. Now, Ireland have played 12 Nations League games. This is the third instalment of the Nations League. They've not won any games in the Nations League. They've only scored in 3 of the 12 games. So this is not exactly a team that has been on the cusp of promotion. They've been struggling for quite a long time. If I give you a list of teams that Ireland, the only teams that Ireland have beaten since their last, I don't want to call it a marquee win, but since their last impressive win in 2017 against Wales, since then, they've beaten Lithuania, Luxembourg, Qatar, Azerbaijan, Andorra, New Zealand, Georgia, Gibraltar, and the USA. They don't tend to pick up impressive wins. They have drawn a couple of times against Belgium and Portugal, which are results that we can only look on at with envy, considering how they treated us a few years ago at Hampden. They battered us. And Ireland have drawn with them pretty recently. But they are not a team that are picking up wins here and there. They're at best really drawing. And I think that we do need, John, to not take the approach that, oh, Dublin's a tough place to go, draw will do. I think if we do draw, it's not the end of the world, but we need to be aiming to win this game.
Well, I've still got to be in my bonnet about 2015, because we went with that mentality of a draw will do. And yeah, when we got that back to 1-1 in that game, I was expecting us to kick on, but we just retreated and let Ireland come at us. And we got the draw, and some Scotland fans were celebrating the game, and I put my head in my hands because I thought, that's just not a good mentality. And then, lo and behold, Ireland get back in it, they qualify. Yes, it's not often a campaign where the world champions lose their away games against your main rivals of group. That was a freak scenario, but we had the chance to bury Ireland that day, and we didn't take it because we had the wrong approach. And this one, I don't accept a minimum of 1 point. I think we've got to go for all 3. I'm not expecting Ukraine to drop points to Armenia and Ireland in this section. They went to Ireland with a backup team and won. So we need to treat this as if it's going to be a shout to us in Ukraine and give us that best chance. We need to take the maximum points against both those teams. And Ireland are not in a good place right now. We have a better squad than them. There's not one player in the Irish team I would take ahead of any of ours right now. And we've got to go there and win this game. Simple as.
Here's a list of some players then in the Irish squad, just to paint that sort of picture. They're essentially an English Championship team with a couple of Premier League players filtered in the squad. So they've got Quiveen Kelleher, the Liverpool number 2 in goals. They've got Shane Duffy, well known to most people up here. James McLean now playing left back, I believe. A couple of Sheffield United centre-halves, the ageing Premier League players that don't really make much of an impact at their club, Jeff Hendrick and Conor Hourihan. Young striker Troy Parrott from Spurs has got a few goals for them in 13 caps. One guy that I don't actually know much about at all, I was quite intrigued by, is Josh Cullen, that plays for Anderlecht. Not sure how that has come about, don't know how good he is at all, but it's always quite exotic when you see someone from our corner of the world playing on in Europe's leagues. So this is the sort of level we're dealing with, not to be disparaging or arrogant about it, Barry, but we do have a squad made up of players playing at a comfortably better level than most of the Irish ones.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And as I said a minute ago, you compare the Scotland squad to the Irish squad, and man for man, the Scottish squad is better. And there's probably not too many times in certainly my lifetime that you would say that. You know, this is probably the weakest Irish team that I've seen. And under Stephen Kenny, they've played 24 games. They've sent a tweet out about this earlier. They've played 24 games, only won 5 of them. Drawn 9, lost 10. And as you've touched on, Andy, a minute ago, the wins during that period under Stephen Kenny, the wins are against Andorra, Azerbaijan, Qatar, Luxembourg and Lithuania. So if we think of, flip this round, if this was Scotland and the manager was under pressure and you had that kind of record, 5 wins in 24 games, you'd be at a pretty low ebb and the support base would be frustrated and you would get an Irish team coming here ready to go for the jugular. So we need to go to Dublin ready to go for the jugular. At the end of the day, this is a competitive international game. So if we are going to go there with a passive mentality and a passive approach, then it's not going to suit us. We need to get on the front foot, get at them and unsettle them quickly and exploit the fact that they're vulnerable. And I would probably say that James McLean at left back is one of the weak points that we can be targeting. Whether that's with Jacob Brown or not and trying to exploit his pace, I don't know. One or two options in that regard. But I certainly think we should be looking at weaknesses in their, you know, middle to back line and trying to exploit them rather than worrying about anything that any damage that they might do to us, because I think we should be able to take care of that.
Well, how do we go for the jugular then, John? Is it about midfield composure, possession and energy? And if so, do we just keep the usual suspects in there? Stuart Armstrong played as one of the more forward ones the other night. He's actually seemed to split opinion on this. I've had replies to my tweet saying that Armstrong was superb. I've had a few replies saying Armstrong was woeful. Where do we stand on this? And is he someone that could continue in that central role?
That's a good question, because I thought Armstrong had a decent game. And as we said, he set up the goal. But then you've got, but I think this is a game for Billy Gilmour to come back. I think it was the right thing to rest him the other night. After his performance last week, and he didn't end the season particularly well with Norwich either, so maybe taking him out was a good thing. But you know, possession is going to be key in the away games, and I think this is you know, again tailor made for Billy Gilmour to come back into the team. So I think that midfield trio picks itself again.
With McGregor still in?
Yeah, he's still in for me. Unless there's an injury in training, I think you keep him in. I know he's got a yellow card now. But I would play McGregor this weekend if he's still fit, definitely. But then who'd you drop out of Christie and Armstrong? And probably the most natural thing to do is drop Stuart Armstrong, which seems harsh given he performed quite well. But Christie's a more natural player to play off someone. He's got a good track record for these kind of games. So that's the call that I think Clark will go with. And to answer your question, possession is going to be key. I think we've just got to... We've got to you know, win that midfield battle. And the thing is, and we don't need to be going into certain away games with trepidation anymore. We showed in Austria that we can get that signature result, and what it can do, it elevated us into that second place. And this is something that we've got to do more of. You know, if we're going to be regulating playoffs and major finals, we need to go away from home and win more regularly. Rather than this a draw will do mentality. And I think we're more than capable of beating this Ireland team. You know, I don't want to, you know, this come back to bite us come Saturday night, but they are there for the taking, and we've got to be ruthless in this sport to make sure that we do the job on them.
Barry, how do you feel about the box midfield then, the two deeper centre ones and the two further ahead behind probably Shea Adams? And consider this with your answer, please. So that for ages, and I don't think Armenia quite hit this, but most teams that we play, when they counter Scotland or when they start to break through the lines, I feel maybe it's just the classic cynicism or scepticism of growing up a Scotland fan, but every time a team breaks forward against us, I feel they look like they're going to score. They look like they're sharp, confident and pacey. I rarely feel that with us. So who in our team would be most capable in that box midfield of four to turn over the ball and move forward at pace to try and hit Ireland quickly?
I probably would go along with what John said, that Armstrong's probably the one to drop out, in which case you have, if you're playing the 3-4-2-1, so you've got the two attacking midfielders in behind the striker, then your two centre mids are McGregor and Gilmour, and then the two sort of deep line number 10s, would be McGinn and Ryan Christie. I think it's more about transitions for me, because if we have the ball, then I'm looking for your two number 10s. If it's McGinn and Christie, I'm looking for them to find the pockets of space. If we've got the ball centrally, find the pockets of space and try and feed like Sir Adams or potentially the other number 10 and get us through the middle. If the ball's wide, I'm looking for one of them to pull wide onto the side that the wing back's coming forward and try and stretch the Irish defence. And then out of possession, you're really wanting probably both of them to try and filter back in towards almost a central midfield area to, you know, stifle the Irish team and close spaces and try and stop them from playing through. I agree with you there, Andy, because your heart is in your mouth a little bit every time Scotland are out of possession and the other team are springing forward. And that was definitely the case against Ukraine. The gap between our back line and the two forwards, Dykes and Adams, against Ukraine was just far, far too big. And we do need to close that better. I think if Christie and McGinn are playing in behind Shea Adams, then I would definitely like to see Christie further forward when we do have the ball and try and getting forward beyond Adams, because Adams quite often will drop short and take a ball on his chest or into his feet and hold it up. And I think Christie can link in with him in that sense. But we can't just rely on Adams for goals, has been proven. We need to get other people involved. You know, great to see Ralston and McKenna get their names on the score sheet the other night, and that's exactly what we need, because we don't have enough of a threat. We don't have a... I know you're going to throw Ross Stewart at me here, but we don't actually have a 25, 30 goal a season striker at international level. I mean, Ross Stewart's still unproven at international level. So we have to try and create goals from other areas of the team. And that midfield kind of four box, as you say, for me, would probably be the first choice. I think that's going to be slightly harsh on Stuart Armstrong, because he had a good game the other night.
I think that is our best midfield four then, John. It's funny you say that about the goal contribution, Barry, because I think McGinn's obviously chipped in more than his fair share over the last 18 to 24 months, but I think that's now Christie not scored since Serbia for us. Yeah. So what's that, 18 months? 18 months? I mean, we've played plenty of games since then, at least 20, maybe 25 now, something like that. So you would hope that Christie, John, can find his way back towards the back of the net again.
Yeah, you would hope so, because although he's had a good season with Bournemouth and helping them get promoted back into the Premier League, and he has contributed assists, he hasn't scored many in the Championship. So that is a worry, that the goals have dried up from, you know, that time before Serbia when he was in form for Celtic at the time as well. It's just dried up ever since for him. But he's still a capable player, and you know, he just needs to have one of those long range shots hit the top corner rather than the top row of the stands, and maybe his confidence will come back. But you know, there should be more goals in that team from others. Had Ross Stewart had more than 4 minutes, you know, there would have been a bigger clamour to say there's a possibility to start. But when you've only had 4 minutes at national football, he's not going to get a game. He's not going to start this game tomorrow. And he'll only really come on if we're struggling and it's 0-0, will it? 15, 20 to go. That's the only time you'll see Ross Stewart tomorrow, I think, or if Shea Adams gets injured.
Well, we're running out of time, 4 minutes left. So let's talk about the back line with the remainder that we've got here. Barry, any changes for you? I don't think you're going to vote Suter out the team, and McKenna certainly did more than enough to keep his place at LCB. So what about the middle? Is Jack Hendry the one to continue, or will Cooper or Hanley come in there, do you think?
I think Hanley will come in, is the short answer. I think that's your back three, Suter, Hanley, McKenna for tomorrow.
John, are you more than happy with that?
I think Hanley is the one that will start, but I personally think Cooper should be one that starts, because he had a decent end of the season with Leeds, and Grant Hanley's had a poor season with Norwich, and that continued into the international game. So if you're going by form, I would say Cooper, but I'm guessing Hanley will be the one that gets the call. And you know, if he just retains the form of 2021, then you know, we'll be fine. But no, I don't see McKenna being dropped after the performance he put in. And I think let's agree with Barry that Suter's made that right centre-back position zone. In my opinion, he had a great game against Denmark. I saw the game the other night, and he was excellent in the Scottish Cup final, which was his first 90 minutes for 120 minutes for a few months. So I think he's grown in stature. And yeah, he's right centre back for me.
I think McTominay then, Barry, is starting to be seen as a substitute for Scotland by quite a few of the fans then.
I think at the moment he's certainly got a fight to get himself back into the team, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's what, you know, that's what we want as Scotland fans. I think the other night we had McTominay coming on from Man United, we had Hickey coming on from Bologna. You know, these are the kind of, normally any player at those clubs would be straight in the Scotland team and absolutely no questions asked. So I think it's a healthy situation for us to be in. And I don't see anything wrong with it. I think every player at international level, you should have to fight for your place and justify your place. So, yeah, I don't have a massive problem with that.
A couple of minutes left, John. We'll finish on the captain, Andy Robertson. There seems to be a bit of a narrative building that he needs a rest. Do you subscribe to this?
I thought before the game on Wednesday he could have done with 90 minutes rest, personally speaking, but obviously he got picked. He had a very good game. I know Steve Clark was very complimentary about him, about his leadership skills. If he's still feeling fit, then absolutely he starts the game. It's as simple as that. I just thought he could have done with rest. I think he could have done with being brought off earlier, as we mentioned before, maybe the 60-minute mark rather than 75, but it's done now. And he clearly loves playing for Scotland. And if he's fully fit, then no issues. Steve Clark knows better than us, see.
Right, well, the team that we seem to have settled on here is Gordon, Ralston, Souttar, Hanley, Stroke, Cooper, McKenna, Robertson, McGregor, Gilmore, McGinn, Christie, Adams. Any problems there?
No, I think that's fair enough. I think that's what I would expect tomorrow.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it pans out. Hopefully Scotland will go and pick up a valuable 3 points, and then we can go away to Armenia and look to make it 3 from 3 next Tuesday. So, Barry, John, thanks for joining me, and we'll chat next week.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.